Hi, everybody. Welcome to Azure Conf, and this is my session on elevating Windows Azure deployments. My name is Michael Collier, and I am the Windows Azure National Architect for Nudesic. If you want to get a hold of me, you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Collier, and I'll take some time at the end as well to have a little bit of a question and answer session. So if you want to tweet, I post your questions to Twitter, make with the hashtag Azure Conf, and we'll try to make sure we get those answered toward the end of the session today. So I just want to start off with a quick overview of what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be covering a little bit on authentication. And this isn't authentication of users using my site and being able to authenticate those users, but more of authenticating me and maybe my laptop or developer workstations to Windows Azure's management API so that we can go ahead and deploy our solutions out to Windows Azure. We're also going to be spending a little bit of time talking about Visual Studio. And then we'll spend most of the session today talking about automating our deployments with PowerShell and rolling that into Team Foundation Server as well. But before we get into a lot of that stuff, I really want to cover why build and deployments is something we're talking about today. Build and deployment processes are really kind of crucial to any project. In some ways, it's the necessary evil on projects. It doesn't get a lot of the attention sometimes, but it's one of those things that as you go through a project, you'll be really, really glad that you spent that time and energy to get it right towards the beginning rather than trying to worry about things when you don't need to kind of be dealing with that towards the end of a project. It's very easily overlooked. And so having that good deployment and build process in place is something you'll be very happy that you have on a project. And what we want to do with our build and deployment projects is really try to automate as much of these as possible. Everything within Windows Azure is automated already, or pretty much everything. We automate how we want to scale our solutions using tools like the auto-scaling application block, or how we provision new servers in a Microsoft data center, how we configure IIS maybe using a startup task. So there's a lot of stuff that we can automate already. We want to automate our build and deployment process as much as possible already. And really, this is a scale factor makes automation one of the key things as well. We're dealing with lots of cloud services potentially, many different things are going on and how we want to deploy our solutions. So we want to automate that as much as possible, really because just the scale and the size of the number of things going on really makes it very easy to make mistakes. So if we automate that and script these deployments out, hopefully we won't have as many mistakes when we don't want to have those. So there's several different deployment options available within Windows Azure. Let's take a quick recap of some of those things. Probably the one area that developers start out with probably the most often is the Windows Azure management portal out of manage.windowsazure.com. It's very easy for us to get started in that way. We go out there, log in with our Microsoft account. We have maybe Visual Studio building our solutions for us. And then we just go to the management console, create a new cloud service, and deploy from there. Very easy to get started that way. Developers also do a lot of deployments using Visual Studio. The tooling in Visual Studio has improved greatly over the last couple of years. It makes it very, very easy to get started, very low developer friction with that. Visual Studio, the new wizards that have been released recently, make it very easy in that they hide some of the kind of the manual things you have to do. And in some ways, that's maybe a good and a bad thing as well. We don't want to understand what's going on with Visual Studio behind the scenes. So if we do need to make some customizations or tweaks to that process, we know exactly what it's doing. We'll talk about some of that today as well. We also have PowerShell. PowerShell gives us a great deal of flexibility and a great deal of power in what we're doing. So we can do pretty much anything from PowerShell. But if you're not really familiar with PowerShell, maybe there's a little bit of a learning curve. Like any new technology, we have to understand what PowerShell is doing, what we can do with that, and then how we can use the Windows Azure commandlets to do our deployments. We also have the management API. There's a lot of stuff we can do with the management API, writing against that REST interface, this native REST interface. So if we want to write our own tools, our own processes, and just consume the API directly, we can certainly do that as well. We also have options with Team Foundation Server and Team Foundation Service. Team Foundation Service has a build process kind of in a preview or beta stage right now where you can take your cloud service and your deploy or check that into Team Foundation Service. And anytime you do continuous type of check-ins there, it'll go ahead and deploy it to your cloud service in Windows Azure already. So that's a pretty nice offering. But what if we have an existing investment in Team Foundation Server and maybe an existing workflow that we want to kind of add our cloud service into? We can certainly do that with Team Foundation Server, and we'll see some of that today as we take an existing PowerShell script and adding that into a build workflow in Team Foundation Server. Also, if we're talking about, though, with how we want to go ahead and build and deploy our options to Windows Azure, requires some form of authentication. Now, let's talk a little bit about the authentication options we have. probably the area that most people start off with right away is using a Microsoft account or a Windows Live ID. You go to manage.windowsazure.com, you'll be presented with a challenge to go ahead and log in with your Windows, log in with your Microsoft account. Once we've logged in with that account, of course, then we can go ahead and create our cloud services, work with storage accounts, deploy our services, pretty much manage our entire solution from the management portal. But what if I'm on a team and I need to actually work with other people? They want to go ahead and deploy solutions as well to my cloud service. One thing I can do is I can give them co-admin access to my subscription. So I go to the management console, they're at manage.windowsazure.com, go to the settings section, and I can add different people's their Microsoft accounts to my current subscription. So I just enter their Microsoft account email address, pick the subscriptions that I want to have them get access to, and then there are co-admins on that subscription. It's important to note that they're co-admins because they can do pretty much anything that I can do as an admin on that account. I'm the service administrator, they're a co-admin, they have the same rights. They can create new services, delete services, whatever I want there. So it's important when we create up co-admins to make sure we get the right people in the right groups so we know exactly what's going on and who's doing certain actions against our subscriptions. If we're not using a Microsoft account and we're going to go with something like Team Foundation Server or PowerShell or Visual Studio, we want to make sure that we have a management certificate. That's how we're going to authenticate with Windows Azure. And there are two types of certificates available in Windows Azure. There's a service certificate and a management certificate. Service certificates we would use for things like setting up SSL on our site. The service certificates we wouldn't be using in this case, we're talking about management certificates. Management certificates are X509 certificates that identify us and our machines to deploy to Windows Azure. You can have a management certificate created ourselves. We can certainly manually create one. We'll see that coming up. Or we can have Windows Azure create a certificate for us as well. Once we have that certificate, we want to upload the CER file into the Windows Azure management portal. It has its own certificate store there. Upload that. We'll keep the private key local in our own laptop certificate store so that we have that public-private key pair that we can work with and be able to authenticate with the management API. So let's talk a little bit about some of the different options you have to create these management certificates. One of the probably easier ways to get started with creating a management certificate is just using IIS. We can open up IIS. There's a server certificate module in there. Click on that. And you'll see a link in, I think, the upper right-hand corner to create a self-signed certificate. You go ahead and create that self-signed certificate, basically following the wizard that it provides for us, entering a certificate name. That'll create that certificate in the local computer personal store. But we have that certificate, it's actually a PFX file, and the management portal needs a .cer file. So what we need to do is open up a management console and add in the certificate snap-in. So open up MMC, add in the certificate snap-in, find the certificate that we just created. Remember, that's going to be in our local computer personal store. Find that certificate, right-click on it and say export. We're going to export that certificate as a CER file, probably may save that to our desktop. And then we can go ahead and deploy that out to Windows Azure, upload that to the management portal. Another nice option we have that Microsoft made recently is the ability to download a published settings file. And that published settings file contains a bunch of information about our subscriptions that we have access to via our Microsoft account, and also contains a Base64 encoded certificate, which contains the private key. So it gives us a certificate that we need to manage our Windows Azure subscriptions. So if I just go to windows.azure.com/download/publish-profile.aspx, I'll be prompted to log in with my Microsoft account. Once I've authenticated there, what Windows Azure is going to do is it's going to prompt me to save this published settings file. That published settings file, like I said, contains a bunch of information about your subscription, but Windows Azure is actually creating a certificate for you in the management certificate stores for every subscription that your Microsoft account has access to. So if you're a service administrator or co-administrator on these accounts, you get a certificate created in each of those subscriptions. The advantage of this approach is it's very, very easy to get started, right? If I'm working with Visual Studio, there's an option in Visual Studio to direct me to that site, go ahead and create the certificate there, that published settings file. If I'm working with PowerShell, again, there's a commandlet that I can execute that'll do the same thing. So very easy, very little friction involved in getting started. A couple of disadvantages of this approach, though, is that it does create a certificate in every single subscription that your Microsoft account has access to. So if I have 15 different subscriptions that I'm either a co-admin or an admin or service administrator on, I'm going to get a certificate created in each one of those. Right now, there's no ability for me to say which subscription I want that certificate created for and which ones I don't. The other kind of negative aspect to this in some ways is the naming that it gives you. It basically concatenates all your subscription names together, so there's a chance I could get a fairly long certificate name that I have to work with. So it's not maybe the most descriptive certificate name in the world there either. And probably the one that hits most often, at least in my case, is hitting the certificate limit for our subscriptions. There's 25 certificates you can have per subscription. So if I'm working on a subscription and I have a couple of our developers working on a subscription and maybe they're working on different machines, and it's very easy for us then to just go and use the tooling, which makes it very easy to create that published settings file, creating the certificate in each individual subscription. So we can certainly hit that, then we have to go in and figure out which certificates we want to actually keep and which ones we actually want to delete out of there so we can maybe do some more work with it if we need more certificates in place. So it's important to understand that when you do this approach, that you need to protect those secrets. That published settings file contains a certificate that will authenticate you, whoever has that certificate, with Windows Azure. So we want to make sure that after we do import that published settings file in Visual Studio or PowerShell, then we can actually go ahead and delete that published settings file or put it in a very safe place. Once you import that, Visual Studio will actually create its own file that contains information about your subscription. You kind of want to see where that's at, or just kind of see what's going on, what you have to work with there. You can go to your user profile, and we have the path here on the screen as well, where you can go and see what you have imported into Visual Studio. An approach that I like to take is not really using IIS or the published settings box. I really want to have more control on my certificates that I create, and the make cert command gives me that control. This you see here on the screen is basically a snippet of a make cert command file that we had, that we can actually keep that in TFS, keep it in source control, and I can customize that to whatever I need it to be, specifying the subject name, the certificate names, if I want to do that. So this makes it very, very easy for me to reuse this if I need to, keep it in source control so that if new team members come on, they understand what we have to work with. It's a pretty flexible and pretty powerful way to work with our subscriptions. So let's talk a little bit now about deploying with Visual Studio. Visual Studio makes it very, very easy to get started as well. I can basically go into Visual Studio, creating a new project, add a new cloud service project, or I can add a cloud service project to an existing, maybe like an ASP.NET MVC project or something like that. Once I have that cloud service project, you think of it really more as a deployment project, I'll then need to go to the publishing wizard, which will help me authenticate to Windows Azure. When I authenticate, I can choose to either import a published settings file, go create a new published settings file, or I can even use an existing certificate that I may already have, loading that into the management portal and getting Visual Studio to bring that in as well. So now we have that match that we talked about earlier. Once I go ahead and do publish, Visual Studio will verify my deployment package, make sure I have everything like I need to be, nothing kind of really getting in the way of that, no bad configuration settings or something like that. Go ahead and create that cloud service for me if that needs to be created, and then upload my information to Windows Azure Blob Storage, uploading my package file and my csconfig file, my configuration file as well. If you're kind of curious as to where that gets deployed in Blob Storage, if you go to your containers and your Blob Storage and your storage account, you'll see a VS Deploy container there. That container will hopefully a lot of times be empty. So you may be wondering what goes in there, and that's really the temporary holding place for the packages that we're deploying. So if you look at that VS Deploy container while Visual Studio and Windows Azure is actually doing the deployment, you'll probably see a file in there that should get cleaned up after the fact as well. One of the things that I like to do, especially if I'm deploying via the management portal, is I'll keep a copy of some of my cloud packages and configuration files in my Windows Azure Blob Storage account. Maybe I'll version them by a date time or some other mechanism that I like to version my deployments by. But by keeping them in Blob Storage and with a nice version on them, I know what I have there. If I need to roll back or deploy a new service at some point, I don't have to upload that information anymore. I have it in Blob Storage. I can simply go to the management portal and tell it to use that particular URL that corresponds to that package. Make it very fast and very easy if I need to redeploy some solutions. So let's talk a little bit about PowerShell now, how we can deploy with PowerShell. The idea here is that we're talking about PowerShell, and we've really taken the steps with maybe using the management portal or Visual Studio, and we've done a lot of stuff manually by now, and we can maybe figure out the process that we have to work with. We understand how I want to deploy my solutions, what pieces need to be in place, so I understand what I've got, and now I want to automate that. And PowerShell lets us do that. And there, these deployments can be maybe tedious. There could be a lot of things going on with that. We have multiple solutions in play, different configurations we want to work with. So by automating this and using a tool like PowerShell, we can keep that deployment script maybe under version or source code control. It really just helps save us time and a lot of frustrations later. And the nice thing I think about having a PowerShell script that can really help us with our deployments is that's one script for everybody to use, one process for an entire team to follow. We've scripted out everything, how my versions are going to be labeled, so I know what to look at in the portal. I can put that, like I said, in Team Foundation Server so everybody can use it. And then I can also leverage that from my build process as well, as we'll see coming up here in a little bit, where I can take that same PowerShell script that maybe I'm deploying from my desktop, have it in Team Foundation Server so I can go in and queue up a continuous deployment or just queue up a new build for that matter as well. So one place to, one kind of script to deploy makes it pretty easy. And this here is a sample of a script we'll actually look at a little bit more today, the publish method on a script. And what this is doing for us is it's going ahead and getting our Azure deployments, seeing if we have anything deployed in that particular deployment slot of that service. And then I have options that I can configure on how I want to handle a deployment if there's something there. If there's an existing deployment and maybe my production or staging slot, I can choose to maybe don't do anything at all, just say maybe error out and get a human involved, somebody needs to take a look at this. Or I can say, you know, I want to go ahead and upgrade this deployment, which could be a quicker operation, just doing a simple upgrade. Or I can delete that current deployment that I have already there and then create a new deployment. We can script out that entire process so we know exactly what's going on and have some, and still have some control over what we're doing as well. Getting started with the PowerShell scripts could be very easy. We go out to the Windows Azure site, go to Manage, and then Downloads. We'll be able to download those PowerShell commandlets. It's important to note, especially if you're coming back to the PowerShell commandlets from maybe looking at them from a little while ago, is that there was a previous version of the PowerShell commandlets that was hosted out on CodePlex. Those CodePlex commandlets were pretty nice, had a lot of stuff to them, but they weren't part of the official product, weren't part of the official Windows Azure package, if you will. The new commandlets that you get off of WindowsAzure.com are the official supported commandlets for Windows Azure. It's important to note, though, as you kind of look with these different commandlets, that not everything that was on the version that was on CodePlex has yet made it into this new version that Microsoft is working on. Some things like storage were available as commandlets on the CodePlex version. They're not yet on this one. So hopefully, as Microsoft continues to rev the PowerShell releases, they'll be adding more and more of that stuff in there and adding a bunch of new features as well. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Once you've got this downloaded and installed, you want to go ahead and import that module, the PowerShell commandlet module, into a PowerShell and put that maybe near the top of your script. Go ahead and get started with that. Once you have that in place, it's very simply a matter of authenticating, choosing how I want to authenticate, because remember, we need to authenticate with Windows Azure to know how we want to deploy our solution. So I can use a publish settings file. Maybe I've downloaded a publish settings file already, kept it on my desktop. I can use that. Or I can select a certificate from my certificate store as well. Once I've authenticated, now I need to pick out which Windows Azure subscription I'm working with. This will tell the PowerShell commandlets that anytime I want to do a deployment or any sort of other operations against my subscription, which one am I working with? Because I may be working with, have multiples available to me. So I can select a subscription, and I can select a storage account as well. I need a storage account. That storage account is going to be necessary so that I know when I upload a service to Windows Azure, which storage account is going to actually store some of that information, right? We're uploading a package file that's going to be temporarily stored in blob storage. Just PowerShell does it very similarly to the way Visual Studio does it as well. So let's cut over to my desktop here. We can take a quick second to actually go through a demo on deploying with PowerShell. So what I want to do is show you a script that we have that does a very simple deployment with PowerShell. Not a whole lot of error handling, not a whole lot of robustness to this script, but I just wanted to show basically how easy it is to get started with PowerShell and deployment. So we'll walk through this script here. Notice at the top of the script we have some variables and parameters that we put in place that really give us, that we can kind of customize for our deployment. So I have my thumbprint, this is the identifier for my certificate, which storage account I'm going to be using, which my host, my cloud service name, so this will be azuremic.cloudapp.net, a friendly name for my subscription that I have, my subscription ID, a unique identifier for my subscription, which deployment slot I'm working with either production or staging. And then I'm giving it the paths to my package file here, as well as my configuration file. So these I would build in Visual Studio ahead of time, and I have them, just the paths listed here, and then a label that will show up in the management portal. So then we just say I want to import this my PowerShell script that we have, my module that we just installed. And then this is logic where I can go ahead and pick out the certificate from my local certificate store. So in this case, I'm going to use one from my personal store using that thumbprint we had earlier. Go ahead and get that out of there. And now this is the couple lines here where I'm actually setting out which subscription I'm going to be using. So I say set Azure subscription, specify the storage account that we're working with, specify the subscription name, which certificate that we just got, and the subscription ID as well. That's going to actually save that down to a local file in our user profile. Now, what I personally like to do is I say select Azure subscription -clear, which basically removes any previously set subscription information from my current context. Doesn't erase the file, but gets out of the current context that I'm in. And then I say select Azure subscription with the name of the subscription that we were provided there. This will load up, so any future commandlets that I run in this context will use that particular subscription. And I say get Azure service, specifying the name of this, the cloud service that I want to deploy. I'm basically doing a check here, getting back all the different, basically making sure that there's no other hosted, or excuse me, cloud service that's already deployed. If that's not been deployed yet, I'm going to go ahead and create a new cloud service, giving it a couple description, a label. I want to say where in the, which Windows Azure data center are we deploying to, and the name, so in this case, Azure Mic. And then I can say, go ahead and create me a new Azure deployment, deploying to whatever slot we had above. So I think this one is set up for staging. And then providing the parameters for where my cloud configuration, my package file, my CS package, giving a label and a service name as well. Also like to specify the verbose option here. This gives me the ability, when I run this script, it'll actually print out some diagnostics information. I can kind of see what is actually going off to the management API, which could be helpful if I'm debugging something, something's not working. Having that verbose flag there can be very helpful. So we can go into Visual Studio here, and let's go ahead and just go here. We have Azure Mic, my very basic ASP.NET MVC project. All I'm going to do is right-click on my project, and I'm going to say Package. I'm going to go ahead and package this up using my cloud configuration and release build. If I look at the output here, all this is going to do is build my solution for me, do any web config transformations just like you normally would as part of a normal build or deployment process. And it's going to build out a cloud package for me. And it'll pop up, Windows Explorer will pop up, and you can see I have my CS package and my CS config file as well. So let's go ahead and run that. We'll go ahead and look at the portal here, and I look at the management console, and I have no Azure Mic services already, so this will be creating a new Azure Mic service and trying to deploy that. So I go to PowerShell, and we're just going to basically do a simple deploy PS1. That was the name of the script that we wanted to execute. Do we enter on that? And you see here now that our PowerShell script is running. It's saying, getting ready to get started, using a certain certificate. And we get a little red error message here. We expected that. That's basically telling us that the Azure Mic service does not exist already. So the PowerShell commandments went out to Windows Azure, checked to see if it wasn't there, got an error back saying it wasn't, which is what we expected. And now we're going to go ahead and create this new service, uploading the information to Blob Storage, and we see we get the verbose option here where it's giving us the XML that's actually sent to the management console, or the management API, to go ahead and deploy. So that'll take a few minutes, right, for it to deploy a new cloud service. But if I go out to my management console now, to my management portal, I can see Azure Mic has been created, and it's going ahead and starting up that service. So if we watch this over the next few minutes, we should see that deployment in our staging slot that we said, go ahead and get created. So a very, very simple way to see how we can create a new hosted service or a cloud service if we need to and deploy that up to Windows Azure as well. Well, that was a very simple one. I want to show you a little more advanced one that has a couple more options in it as well. So we'll switch over to this script. And it's going to look very similar in some ways to what we just saw, but it has a couple more options to it. We're again starting off with importing our module. Again, getting a certificate. And what I like to do is make sure that I have some sort of error checking in place that if I maybe type the thumbprint wrong or something else, the certificate wasn't installed on my machine, I don't want to keep going, I want to error out. So we're going to have a little bit of error checking in place. And then this import Azure Published Settings file, that's the command that we can run if I have a published settings file. I can go ahead and do that, and that'll just import that in just like Visual Studio would for us as well. And then again, the same logic about setting, clearing, and selecting our Azure subscription. Now I have the option to create a deployment label. Maybe I would pass a deployment label in from someplace else. Or I can basically tell my script to go ahead and create one for me. In this case, I like to use a deployment label that kind of matches the current date and time. So we'll go ahead and do that. We'll call publish. We'll come back to publish in a minute here. And then I have a get Azure deployment, which is basically just making sure that I got everything deployed, and I'm going to print out some information at the end that shows me the URL and the deployment ID that we finished with. So let's take a look at the publish method. Scroll up here to publish. If we look at publish, this is what we saw in the PowerPoint slide a couple minutes ago, where I want to make sure to check that, see if there is a deployment there. Let's say that we do have a deployment in place. So I have a couple of switches here to tell me how I want to handle that. I can say, you know what, I want you to do a deployment upgrade, which we'll call upgrade deployment. We'll look at that in a minute. Or if there is a deployment there, I want to go ahead and delete that deployment and do create new update. Upgrade deployment is going to be a much faster operation. It doesn't have to tear down the previous one and create a new one. Definitely is a lot faster, several minutes faster to do an upgrade versus a delete and a create. Or I can say, you know, error out, get a human involved as well. And of course, if there's nothing already there, I want to go ahead and create that new deployment. Create new deployment looks pretty much like what we saw before. Have a little bit more information about some logging. We can kind of print out the screen what's going on so we can kind of see that type of stuff. And we also have a method here called start instances, which is really basically a polling method to give us some feedback that let us know when our new cloud service has actually been started. We're going to deploy that and tell it to start up. We want to make sure that we know when that's started as well. If I wanted to do an upgrade, I can do that as well. There's a commandlet called set Azure deployment. All I need to do is pass it the upgrade. They'll put it in upgrade mode, give it the service name, give it a label, and all the other stuff you would normally expect, a package and a configuration as well. So we get all that information in place. If you want to see delete again is very simple to delete it. Basically, all we're saying is I want to go ahead and remove that deployment. Essentially, a one line of code to get rid of that guy. So what we could do, let's look at our portal again real quick. So this thing looks like it's getting closer in our staging slot. What I want to do is go ahead and actually deploy this to the production slot as well. What I want to do is actually do a whole build and deploy. So I want one script that's going to build everything for me and push it out to Windows Azure. So one button's click and go. We can certainly do that. We take our bigger publishing script here, and what I want to do is just create another PowerShell script that's actually going to handle our deployments or actually building it for us as well. So all we're doing in here is we're really doing a lot of the same work that Visual Studio would do. We're calling out to msbuild, and then I'm saying, I want you to go ahead and run against my ccproj file. So I want you to take that, compile that project, compile any web projects or worker roles associated with that, do all the normal compiling stuff. I want to use my certain build configuration, so like debug or release or any other custom build configurations that I have. And then I want you to call the publish target. Now this is kind of an interesting thing with the deployment targets that we have. Publish isn't publishing to Windows Azure. Publish in an MS build target for in this case is actually creating that package file for us. Once you have it all built, go ahead and create that CS package and CS config file for us. So we want to specify to MS build that I want you to go ahead and do that. Make sure again that the build succeeded. And then I have some options here, very similar to what we saw before, some parameters that I can specify on how I want to, what cloud service to use, what the storage account should be, what the thumbprint should be, that sort of stuff. You also notice that while we can deploy off of our local file system, I can also use PowerShell to deploy off of a file in blob storage as well. So if I wanted, maybe I had some stuff in blob storage, I could execute the same script, just changing the package name to, instead of being a local file, to be one that's referenced in my blob storage account. And then I call my Azure Publish script, passing in all the parameters that we have, our storage name, our service name, a location, any deployment label that I have, any options on how I want to handle deployments and upgrades, all that sort of stuff that we saw before. So if I go over here to another PowerShell script, let's say I want to run that. So I should just be able to hit enter on that. It's going to actually kick off the build. I get a little bit of build output here. And when it gets to the core publish task, you see now at the bottom, that's one that's taking a little bit longer. That's actually creating that package file for us. Did that, and now we can see some information here that it actually is finished building the project, starting the script, using a certain certificate. There's no deployment detected. In this case, we're deploying to our production slot instead of our staging slot. Now it's going to go ahead and uploading the information into blob storage and creating that new deployment for us. So this will take, again, a few minutes. We'll check back on this a little bit later. But that should be in progress now. So we should be able to go to our management portal, again, and see that now we're starting this particular one in the production slot as well. So we have one in staging that's getting ready to hopefully be finished pretty soon. But our production one is just getting started as well now. So taking a very simple script, how easy does it get started, seeing one that's maybe a little more advanced, has a little more error handling and still a very basic script in a lot of ways, and how we can just have one deployment, one PowerShell script, and be very useful for deploying solutions. We found this to be useful on a couple projects where the team members wanted to have one thing to go out and deploy, didn't have to mess with a bunch of other stuff. Say that PowerShell script, we can then configure different PowerShell scripts for different environments as well. Pretty handy to have going. So we'll leave that going for a little bit. Let's switch back over to our slides here. So let's talk a little bit now about deploying with TFS. If I have my PowerShell script that I just created, I still have some code that maybe my project's in Team Foundation Server. What I want to be able to do is go into Team Foundation Server, queue up a new build, or maybe have a continuous deployment option where every time I check in that code, Team Foundation Server is going to go ahead and bring down all my code, build it all up, package it for me, and deploy it to Windows Azure. Maybe I have an existing investment in maybe a more complicated build workflow. And what I want to do is just basically add a little bit of a section maybe towards the end of that that handles my deployments for me. And that's what we're doing here. So you can see on my left-hand side of the screen, we have a definition for maybe a little bit of a build workflow. All we're doing is just executing out that PowerShell script. And we'll talk about that and see that here in a little bit as well. Well, if I had that build definition that I've now customized to be able to call PowerShell, I can have that in TFS, and I can leverage that across multiple different projects. And I have one build definition or build process template that I can reuse. And it makes it very nice is I can have some parameters that I can specify, like my cloud configuration, which subscription ID am I using, what certificate thumbprint am I going to be working with, where is the PowerShell script itself. So I have the option in here to go ahead and check that PowerShell script into TFS along with the rest of my code so that maybe different projects have a slightly different PowerShell script for depending on what they need to do. So give me a lot of options there on how that's going to work. There's one thing to kind of know that continuous deployment, very easy to set up as well. I can give it a manual check-in in Visual Studio or in Team Foundation Server or a continuous deployment. So every time I check in that code, it's going to get deployed to Windows Azure, which could be a great way to go. But it's important to know there's a little bit of cost implication in doing that as well. Because every time I have something, even though I'm not using it, it's just still deployed to Windows Azure, I'm still paying for that service. So if I have a development team, we have a couple of instances deployed. Maybe during the night, I don't need that information out. I don't need those services there, so I may want to delete those as well, just to kind of save a little bit of money in the process. So you can kind of write some scripts to go ahead and delete those or maybe scale down the number of instances if you want to do that as well. And in our PowerShell script, we saw where I could handle how I want to handle deploying services if there's already a service in that same slot. We can say I want to do an upgrade, or if I want to take another pass saying I want to go ahead and delete and redeploy. Upgrade, as I mentioned before, is a little bit faster, but I can also do a delete and redeploy. The downside to delete and redeploy is really, really two things. One, every time I do a delete, I'm probably going to get a new virtual IP address because the lifetime of my service I'm guaranteed to have that virtual IP address for the lifetime of that cloud service. So if I'm deleting and redeploying it, I may lose my virtual IP address. And also, every time I do a delete and redeploy, I'm charged for one hour of service with Windows Azure. So if I'm constantly doing a continuous integration, I'm checking in multiple times, I'm constantly deleting and redeploying, one, it's going to be slower, and then I'm going to increase my cost as well. So maybe as kind of an idea of kind of bringing down the cost as much as possible, I try to limit the number of times I have to do a delete and redeploy, and I scale down the number of instances or delete my development instances automatically at night if no one's using them. Setting up a build server is not in itself that hard to do, but it is a little bit time consuming from what I found. A lot of times as developers, we'll have Visual Studio installed and we'll use WebPI to go ahead and get everything ready for us. It makes it very, very easy. But I don't probably have Visual Studio on my build server, so I have to maybe kind of configure some stuff automatically. And having a good logging system set up in Team Foundation Server, getting that turned on, maybe turning up the verbosity of the logging can be very, very helpful, because if I get a slash wrong or I don't have something installed, I really want to understand what's going on, and having that logging in Team Foundation Server so I can see that information and try to figure that out can definitely be very helpful. Now, some of the things you may need when you're setting up a build server, obviously you make sure you're the right version of the .NET framework. You might need some of the authoring tools or some of the tools for Visual Studio. Getting the commandlets installed. A lot of the same sort of stuff you would let web platform installer do, you might have to download and handle that manually. When I'm setting up a build server, I like to know exactly what's on that build server and kind of do the process manually so I understand exactly what's going on there. I don't want any surprises. I'm also probably going to need a targets file, and the Microsoft.webapplications.targets file is one that you'll probably have to copy from maybe your developer workstation that has Visual Studio on it. Copy that over to your build server. And of course, then getting a management certificate as well so that your build server is authenticated with the management API or with the management portal as well. So maybe I'll have a different certificate for my build server just to maybe how I want to handle security. And it's really kind of up to you on how you want to handle that. So let's take a look now at PowerShell and TFS, maybe taking that existing PowerShell script that we had before and rolling that into our environment with Team Foundation Server. So we'll switch over here to this instance of Visual Studio. Make that a little bit smaller so hopefully we can read that. So this is just a very basic build process template that we have. It's normally starting with the default template. And all we're doing here is we'll go down towards the bottom. We've added a little bit of logic in here to actually call out handling our PowerShell deployments. So we have an if condition towards the end. We're saying, you know, if I do have a published script location, so if I did specify something in my build template, giving it the path to that PowerShell script, if we have that script location defined, I want you to go ahead and start publishing. And there's a process here we call execute Azure publish script. If we look at the properties for that that process there, all you can see here in the file name, all we're doing is invoking PowerShell. And what I want to do is look at the arguments here. So we'll open this up. And the window is a little hard to read, so I'm going to copy this into Notepad here to make it a little bit easier. So you see, all we're doing here is basically saying, calling PowerShell, giving it a file argument. So it's the file our PowerShell script is defined. And then we're saying, what service am I going to deploy to? What's my storage account name, my package location, deployment slot, production or staging, what thumbprint am I using, so on and so forth. And I have these arguments here, and these are custom parameters that we're going to define as part of our build process template that I can specify then to say what I want to be, what I want to go on in here. So we'll cancel that. And those arguments we just define down here, so you can see Azure service name, subscription ID, published directory, all that sort of stuff. Define there. So if I go in and I want to kind of see what's going on here, I can go to Team Explorer. Maybe I want to look at this build definition. So I have one Azure Conf TFS. Let's just go ahead and edit that build definition. So you can see here we have, this is our kind of customized version of our script, got that checked into TFS. A couple things to point out here. If you look under the advanced section, it's like MS build arguments. We're specifying a target of publish. So again, it's the same publishing target that we used before, so we want to go ahead and build and package out our cloud project. So we say, I want to go ahead and publish this, which is actually going to create a package for us. And you notice the project that we're actually building is not our solution, like is kind of the default. We're actually going ahead and move this over. We're going to be using our CC project file, our cloud project. That's the project that we're going ahead and deploy. So we want to publish that guy. And then here under the miscellaneous section, these are those arguments that I can specify in or pass into my PowerShell script. So what is my thumbprint? Which environment am I using or slot, my production or staging? What's the path to my PowerShell script? So I can have that PowerShell script in TFS and to pull that out of there as well. What's my service name, my storage account? All the normal stuff we saw earlier, I can have in here as well. So we've got all that in place. Let's try to go ahead and deploy that and see what we get with that. So I'm going to actually look at the portal here, go back. So those two that we deployed earlier, looks like they're up and running. I have my Azure Conf already, a service already created, but nothing in the production or staging slots. So let's go ahead and deploy that. So I'll queue up a new build. So queue that. So while that's getting going, that's going to take a few minutes to get going. What I don't want to do is actually sit here and wait for that to happen. So I want to show you kind of the output of that array. So I already had one deployed earlier today. So let's click on the result of that. And what I can see in here, if I look at the log, is kind of the output that we saw earlier from our PowerShell script. See, all the input parameters are passing to MS build, which could be helpful in debugging. And if I go down towards the bottom, we should see the options here to execute our Azure publish script. And this is the line that we're actually calling to PowerShell, which can be very helpful in trying to debug what's going on. So you can see all the parameters that we're using there, and then the output of what certificate we're using, what storage accounts, we can see the name of our deployment got created, our label here as well. So basically kind of seeing what's going on, and then getting the status for those roles as well, where it's busy, ready, and then finally the URL for that. So we look here at our deployment, we should see in a little bit here that deployment actually get created, probably still in process as well. Yeah, so this guy is still going, so should be getting close to getting that up and running as well. So see, very, very easy, take an existing PowerShell script, get that into TFS, and then use that PowerShell script, whether it's running locally or running it in TFS. So let's switch back over to our slides here. All right, so one of the things I want to talk about a little bit as we get towards the end of the session here is how I want to handle different logical environments. One of the things that comes up a lot of time is maybe I have to handle a development, a QA, and a production environment, and they have maybe different configurations across those. Maybe I run smaller, maybe extra small VMs in my development environment to save some money, but I need mediums or larges in my QA and production environments. One of the things that comes up, though, is that the VM size is actually defined in the CSDef file. And the Visual Studio tooling works really good in the sense that I can have multiple cloud configuration files, but the virtual machine size is actually in the CSDef file and not my cloud configuration. And the tooling doesn't really let me have multiple CSDef files. So what I'll often do is create multiple cloud projects within that same solution. So I have one bigger solution that has all my code in, all my different roles in it. And then I'll have maybe three or four different Windows Azure deployment projects for each type of environment I'm deploying to. So there's a little more maintenance involved in keeping them together and keeping them all in sync, but each project is essentially the same. They reference the same web roles. But the only thing I'm working with now is so I have the tooling to help me specify things like a different virtual machine size, if I need to edit any sort of configuration settings. The tooling makes that very easy, so having different projects to kind of keep that all in sync can definitely be very, very helpful. You're also going to have different build definitions as well. So maybe I have these different projects in my solution, but now I want to take that and put it into TFS. I need different build definitions for those as well. So I have different build definitions set up for dev and for QA, and for staging or integration or whatever my different logical environments are. And that allows me to kind of change those parameters as well. If I'm setting up things like my different storage accounts or services or deployment slots, I can actually have all that stuff as different input parameters, so I know what's going on with each of those definitions in TFS and kind of change them on the fly as well if I need to. So as we get towards the end here, I kind of want to recap. We talked about different authentication mechanisms that I have. I can use Microsoft accounts, or I can use a management console, management certificates if I need to. Different ways I can get that management certificate, whether that is working with IIS to create it, using a published settings file, or creating it myself with the make cert command. I can take once I know how I'm going to authenticate and I have that certificate in place, I can use tools like Visual Studio to go ahead and deploy out there. It makes it very, very easy to deploy, but also still important to understand what I have in place, kind of know what's going on behind the scenes. So if I need to customize it, I can do that. We have our PowerShell script that we can work with. We've seen how easy it is to get started with PowerShell, going and downloading those commandlets, importing the module. I can create my services there, work with storage accounts, go ahead and create a new cloud service if I need to. I can then make more advanced PowerShell script to how I want to handle upgrades or deletes and whatever I need to do within PowerShell there. taking that larger PowerShell script, using it on my developer workstations across my team, and also taking that script and putting it in TFS as well, so that I can have one script that works everywhere as far as, building locally and building out a source control. And really, the idea here is that there's multiple different paths that we can choose from, whether I want to work with Team Foundation Server or PowerShell or Visual Studio, really choosing the option that works best for me. But really, the idea being to automate as much as possible. I want to automate really anything I can do with this, because maybe I just feel that's an easier way to go. I don't want to make any mistakes, and automating that stuff really reduces the chance of any of those type of mistakes being happened. And I can put all that in TFS and version it so that any new developers come onto the team, they know what's going on as well. So some resources that we have available. Definitely would recommend checking out the Windows Azure Training Kit. There's a lot of good information there, hands-on labs. I think they just released a new version of the training kit today, so definitely go ahead and download that and see all the new goodness there. The Windows Azure Guidance section has a lot of good information. The PowerShell script that you saw here today, as well as working with TFS, that kind of build process, is very, very similar to what is actually on the Guidance site. We've tweaked it a little bit for a couple of projects, adding in some more error handling and a few other minor tweaks to suit the different workflows that we wanted to have, but still a very simple and easy way to get started there. If you want to learn more about continuous delivery, I would definitely check out go to windowsazure.com, and go to develop, and then there's a common task area. They have a whole continuous delivery section there that walk you through setting up some of the stuff, and it'll even walk you through setting up Team Foundation Service as opposed to Team Foundation Server, so I can use Team Foundation Service to deploy as well. And if you want to learn more about Visual Studio and different options that it has, there's a really good article out on MSDN that you can get to see more information and all the details there. If you have any questions, you can definitely hit me up on Twitter at Michael Collier and tag those with AzureConf, and we'll be definitely try to get access to answer those. If you want to have any kind of discussions online, I'll certainly be happy to answer questions on Azure or any sort of deployment with PowerShell or TFS. So I don't know if we have any questions, but I'll definitely try to answer those maybe later today as well. And that's about it I have. I want to thank you guys for attending AzureConf and the session on elevating your Windows Azure deployments. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Collier or on my blog at michaelscollier.com. And thank you very much.